We are here at the 2017 Q CEO Executive Team Network. I'm calling it a gathering.
Yes.
A gathering of like minds. Yes.
Yes, a festival.
Exactly. We are here with Lee Wetherington. How are you, Lee? It's been a year.
It has been a year. It's been a while.
But well worth it.
I think it was when we last spoke.
That's right. Last year in Savannah. That was fun. But well worth the wait. Hey, you are, first of all, how's the conference going for you?
Conference is going great. We've had a lot of really interesting discussions here with the CEOs about distinguishing true competitors from true partners and deciding strategically what to do to get to those partners of choice going forward.
How do you disseminate?
To differentiate that, it's a bit of a trick. So we're finally all understanding that fintechs are not an existential threat to credit unions.
Yeah, that's what I'm
You know, we use the word disruption a lot. We use the word disintermediation a lot. But I think we finally, as an industry, sobered up and realized none of that has come to pass. And what you have now are thousands of fintechs who are desperate to partner with credit unions and other financial institutions to get to a business model that might help them survive or pay back those venture capitalists. So the question now is, you know, who, okay, fintech, so are they now partners rather than competitors? The answer to that is, for the most part, yes. The real trick is how to leverage the right fintech or fintechs of choice to strategically differentiate your credit union from any other credit union, any other bank, any other financial institution, or from or against what seems to be the bigger competitive concern now, which are the big techs. So Amazon, Google, Apple, et cetera, are making these very aggressive stored value plays. And what I mean by stored value plays are, in essence, accounts. Accounts that you literally deposit money into or keep money in. You think of Amazon has Amazon Cash, where you can literally take cash, take it to a convenience store, scan your little QR code, that cash gets deposited into your Amazon account. Amazon today announced a refresh of their Amazon allowance application, making it easy for parents to actually do allowance with their kids. Of course, the allowance they're getting on a scheduled, convenient basis can be spent only at Amazon,
of course,
within the Amazon ecosystem, etc. Later this fall, you will have Apple coming out with its P2P, its peer-to-peer payments. So my iPhone to your iPhone, I can send you money. The question is, where does that money go? Well, it stays in your Apple Pay wallet. It is literally being called Apple Pay Cash. Well, that looks and smells and feels a lot like financial services. And it is financial services. And so even according to the World Economic Forum's latest report, published in August, about the future of financial services, they're saying, those fintech projections that we had made, you know, 2 years ago even, we were wrong about that. Big tech is the threat. So I think going forward, credit unions are going to figure out that not only should they be strategically leveraging fintech, but they need to do so in order to stave the threat of big tech.
Just out of curiosity, I'm going off a little tangent here, how does Apple make money on the peer-to-peer? Is there like some sort of interest thing when the money's in limbo, or how do they do that?
Well, it depends on how those P2P payments are funded originally.
Okay.
Is there cash already in that Apple Pay Cash wallet?
I can totally see that.
If so, there's no cost. Are you drawing from a credit card? There is then typically interchange involved, but not interchange that Apple is making. That would be interchange interchange would be paid there by Apple.
Right.
So
right.
This is not a revenue play. By Apple. This is a payments play. This is a play to solidify the seamless sort of ecosystem they're building around. You know, what credit unions need to think about is the end of that is that you end up with cash that is not sitting at the credit union.
Exactly.
Just like Starbucks. Yeah. Starbucks, you've got $1.8 billion sitting, if stored value, sitting inside of virtual cards as a part
my
of
money
Starbucks.
My money, too. I got $25 on there right now.
Et cetera, right? So you begin to add all of that up, and you begin to think about how Amazon is now coming into this, and everybody knows how aggressive Amazon is. It's not just Amazon allowance. It's Amazon Cash. It's the fact that Amazon has already done $3 billion in loans. You go on down the line, and you realize, wait a minute, these big tech players, that have platforms that all of us individually are already plugged into might be the bigger concern going on. So how, what do we do about it? How do we leverage fintechs against that going forward?
And now, is this some of the topics that you talked about in your panel with
this,
Sam?
This was, we covered that in the panel. We covered that individually in the work group breakouts that we did earlier this morning. And so what that was a really interesting scenario this morning with the breakouts. I was, my group was talking about, okay, how do you define competitor? How do you define partner? Okay. How do you know who a competitor is? Mm-hmm. Is that data driven or are you just going off your gut, right? So there were some very interesting conversations mm-hmm. around that. Then in Sam's group, they were talking about, okay, if you recognize that fintechs are potential partners, mm-hmm. okay, there are 4,000 fintechs in the US and the UK. How do you go about narrowing down to the one or two fintechs of choice that are going to strategically differentiate your credit union? Mm-hmm. And then in JP's session, they were talking about, okay, you've identified the fintech. How do you go about putting a partnership into place? What are tactically and technically what's involved in getting that done?
Oh, so timely, because I mean, probably nearly every credit union struggles with this today because it's evolving so fast.
That's
so
right.
It's just crazy. Now, in your panel with the three of you together,
what did you guys
discuss in there? Was it along the same lines
secret
or
No. We discussed a lot of those things. Sam and JP both brought a world of experience to bear on what's going on in the fintech scene globally. That's really Sam's expertise. You know, we talk here and everything that we say is really over the unspoken assumption that here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that the United States and North America are really, our financial ecosystem is a much different animal than what you have in Europe and even what you have in Asia and what you have in Africa. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we make really broad generalizations, as we've done in fintech, mm-hmm. that, well, you know, if they've gotten away from hard currency in China, that's going to happen in the United States too right away. No, you can't. There are a lot of different wild cards and variables. We are a very fragmented financial ecosystem in the United States, both from a regulatory standpoint, a charter standpoint, even a technology standpoint. So a lot of these assumptions that we've been making based on global trends are either, not necessarily not true, but they're certainly on a different timeline in the United States. Yeah. So we spent a good deal of time, a good amount of time in the panel discussion.
We seem to be a little behind in a lot of this stuff, you know? I mean, like EMV is an example we were behind.
There's something else. We're the last in EMV. If you look at even mobile wallet adoption, we continue to see just really insignificant transaction volume in terms of mobile wallet adoption. And, our payments are still very slow, even though we are at the beginning of faster and then real-time payments. That'll probably be, over the next 2 to 5 years, maybe the biggest transformation we see in our own industry, is being able to ubiquitously send money in real-time to any financial institution in the United States. And that, by the way, is going to be the beginning of the re-engineering of every financial product and service that credit unions have been offering. People don't often understand the connection between payments and other financial services, mm-hmm. but for instance, if we can now, within a couple of years, move money in real time anywhere in the United States, mm-hmm. well, you can fund a loan instantly. If you can fund a loan instantly, should you be doing instant loans? Well, if you're going to do instant loans, you've got to be underwriting instantly. You've got to be doing decisioning instantly, in addition to the funding of the loan instantly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this new capacity to move money faster is just the beginning of doing almost everything we've been doing in the past in different ways. And there'll be new things that we can do that we've never been able to do before, all out there for us to create.
This is fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff.
How it's changing, how it's evolving. Because you mentioned in one of your previous responses that our financial system is fragile. Is it fragile because of the constant change? Oh, fragmented. My apologies.
It's okay. It's fragmented.
Okay.
We could have a different discussion on fragility. I don't want to worry anybody.
We're okay.
We're okay. No, I meant fragmented.
My bad.
We have more financial institutions.
Gotcha.
We have older systems. We have still batch-oriented in our payment mm-hmm. processing, et cetera, et cetera. And that's all legacy that slows us down compared mm-hmm. to other parts of the world who were way behind us and then suddenly just skipped several stages mm-hmm. right into mobile-first mm-hmm. Payments, commerce, et cetera.
Okay. I'm going to get you off the hot seat here because I know you got lots of stuff to do. How do you see the rest of the year, getting your crystal ball out, how do you see the rest of the year shaping up and then going into 2018? Because I know there's so much change going on and it's really hard to have a clear crystal ball on this stuff. But yeah, I think you might have a good take on it.
So I think you'll see a few things. First of all, we're all going to be completely consumed with the advent of faster and real-time payments over the next, and that's short-term. We're already in stage two of faster same-day ACH settlement in that network. That will be followed next year in 2018, first quarter of 2018, by the first financial institutions tying into the clearinghouse's real-time payments network, which is a completely new payment trail, you know. I mean, from the bottom up, completely new. It'll be interesting to see how real-time payments and the same-day ACH network actually compete against each other for payment volume, activity, use cases, et cetera. So there'll be a lot of activity around that. We will continue to see our EMV point-of-sale terminals finally begin to enable their NFC capacity that you'll will hopefully reach, I think, by the end of 2018, a functional ubiquity in acceptance of mobile wallet, NFC
contactless
mobile wallets.
Payments,
So Apple Pay, Android Pay, Samsung Pay.
Hallelujah.
Yes, hallelujah for that. A long time coming for that, but you know, there's some other cultural and political factors there that may slow that down, but I think we'll see some progress on that front. The other thing is just going to be fraud.
Oh, yeah.
Equifax has finally, I think, gotten it into the common culture that privacy is dead, personally identifiable information used as authenticating anything is dead. We have to go not just to biometrics, we have to layer that with behavioral aspects to be able to authenticate anybody into anything in the digital space. So those are the things that are going to be preoccupying us. And fraud, the fraud is really scary. That one breach at Equifax is going to fuel a spike in new account fraud, in account takeover fraud, et cetera. Many people don't know this. Last year was the first year in 14 years that every single category of payment fraud went up. And it went up on the backs of these breaches that, you know, last year was a record-setting number of breaches. This year will break that record, especially because of the Equifax situation. So it's going to be a tough row. So this is interesting to think about. Payments are getting faster, and combating fraud is getting harder, especially in smaller windows now that payments are settling quickly. So you've got all of that happening at the same time, and that's really going to be our a big part of our work ahead in the next years.
That's the double-edged sword of convenience.
That's right. So, that's exactly
it. We have this wonderful thing that we can just go and swipe our phone or our hand or whatever in the future, but the fraudsters are getting better, faster, quicker, all that type of stuff.
That's right. They will always be there to take
advantage. So the end result here is that, but having said all that, the value for credit unions goes up, right? Because of all this type of stuff?
Yeah.
Fraud aside.
Yes. So. I think the opportunity is there for those credit unions who can look at the chaos and the complexity of opportunity, know what their be very clear-minded about what their strategy and culture is, and from that, choose from that complexity of opportunity the right partnerships to differentiate in meaningful ways that translate to great signature experiences for their members. Those credit unions are going to continue to grow. We already have good industry numbers for credit unions in general. The Callahan numbers came out earlier today. You know, great membership growth, great loan growth, et cetera. So those who are very mindful of this strategic differentiation will continue to grow and thrive.
Great message to end on. Lee, always a pleasure. Always an education.
Yeah,
thank you so much, man. Yeah, well done.
Take care.
Keep up the...